This is episode 6 of season 5 of The Bad Apples. My name is Klaatu, and this is The Bad Apples Linux Ogcast. This episode specifically is going to be a little bit about Enlightenment. There's a big, exciting release looming overhead, so that's really exciting. I'm going to be talking about Unix Mail, or rather generic Unix Mail, or GNU Mail, the email subsystem in a GNU operating system. How's that? And I'll also talk a little bit about the licensing of this show that you are listening to right now, or rather this series that you are listening to right now. So let's get started. So looks like DR17, which is the, I guess people call it, you know, E17 of Enlightenment, and the EFL 1.0, which is the Enlightenment Foundation Libraries or something like that. Enlightenment Foundation Libraries, they're going to be released as a stable, an actual stable release. This is the 17th version of the window manager that is Enlightenment, and it's the first version of the new generation libraries, and this will be their first stable release after 10 years. That is 10, not binary numbers, but 10. That's one decade. So this is big news. It's huge. I mean, this is great and exciting, and it's going to be really, really cool. And yes, everyone's been using Enlightenment 17 for probably a year now, maybe longer, but it's cool that they're saying, yeah, this is getting our stamp of approval, this is now a stable release. That kind of thing is important, I think, because it gives people confidence in the environment that they're running. So it's nice. It's good to get a stable release. The way that they're doing this is they're paring down the scope of what they are trying with Enlightenment. So this release will have no third-party modules in it. It's not going to have any third-party themes in it. It will have no applications in it. It will not have any of the secondary library. It's just going to have the really, really important stuff to get the desktop running as it is. So essentially, that's like about maybe 10 Enlightenment libraries and then Enlightenment itself. That's, I think, significant because I'm sure somewhere there's a lesson there, you know, to really, you know, when you're doing an open source project, something that's kind of like being contributed to and it's kind of out there already, and I don't, or any, maybe it's any project. I mean, you have to really look at the scope of what you're trying to do and see where it's realistic and where it's just going to keep going on and on forever. So it sounds like that's what they did. I don't know if any of this had anything to do with the news a while back that Samsung was investing in Enlightenment. I'm not really sure if that's related or if it's just purely coincidental or what, but this is definitely, E17 should be very, very cool. There are Slack builds available of this, not by me, but that is how I got this news, because the Slack build mailing list had a mention of this, and then I saw it, and I jumped on it, and it was really exciting. You can see the announcement itself. It's not really an announcement yet, I guess, but if you go to tractrac.enlightenment.org/e/wiki/packaging with a capital P. So, and I'll have that in the show notes. But you can look at the page about the distribution specific packaging and stuff like that on their track site. It'll tell you how to compile different things, you know, what flags should be enabled and all that other stuff, dependencies, things like that. So Enlightenment, if you haven't heard my Hacker Public Radio episodes on the subject, it's a really, really cool sort of mix between Fluxbox simplicity and KDE beauty. So when I use it very much like Fluxbox. That's kind of the paradigm that it fits into for me, but you could just as easily use it as a fully featured rich desktop as well, which I've done that before too. In fact, on my Toshiba right now, it's running on there. So, and that's E17, the pre-stable version of it, and it's quite nice, and it works really well, and it's got a few things that you have to get used to, you know, like the whole dragging the thing to the end of the screen, and it just flipping over onto the next desktop, which is great for some people. Some people, it totally throws them off. So it's got a couple of things in there that are peculiar, but for the most part, it's just a really, really familiar feeling and yet unique desktop. So if you haven't tried it recently, you should, and if you think you might be interested in something different, you might want to try it. I keep thinking that it's just different enough to throw some people off, you know, especially after you get settled into your own desktop environment. And granted, using KDE, you know, on most of my machines, and Fluxbox on some others, you do kind of get into get settled into a desktop. But if you like to mix it up a little bit and look at what other projects are doing that are really unique and everything, then check out Enlightenment, and it's really nice. And eventually, I'm going to have some tutorials on how to set your own key bindings and stuff like that in Enlightenment, much like I do for Fluxbox and KDE, because I just think that's something that a lot of Linux people like to do, so I'll probably have something in there for that, but it's pretty self-explanatory. So, yeah, check it out. It's enlightenment.org for the project. I don't know if it's literally stable right now as of this recording. It might be something that's going to happen in the next few days, but look at DistroWatch, probably. I imagine that there would be some kind of announcement on there. Maybe, maybe not. But just keep checking enlightenment.org, I guess, for the actual release. And like I say, Slack Builds will have a stable release of this available via slackbuilds.org. So if you're running Slackware, you can get it there. I see on their packaging thing that Gentoo also has it all packaged up. Debian, Ubuntu, Fedora, Mandriva, SUSE, and Windows. And I think it's in Mac ports as well, I'm not sure. So there you go. You can find it pretty much no matter what you're on. So check it out. Southeast Linux Fest is coming up sooner than you think. The Southeast Linux Fest, of course, is the festival that was, spearheaded in some part by Dave Yates of a lot of Linux Links, Linux Users, Linux Podcast, now Linux Ogcast. And I don't know if it was his literal idea or not, or how much he attributes to the rest of the Lug area, you know, the Lug in his area or what, but he certainly is the current president of the big foundation that is the Southeast Linux Fest, and I think most people associate that festival with him. So, for better or for worse, it's his festival. So if you go to southeastlinuxfest.org, you should find that, yes, registration is open, and you can now register for $65, 65 big ones, 65 beans. You can just pay that to them, and you'll get a t-shirt and some drink tickets if you're of the alcohol partaking sort, which I am not, so the drink tickets will probably be donated back to the festival or something in my case, but if you do drink, then you get 2 free drink tickets, so it's $65, or you can go for free, and in that case, you don't get a t-shirt, you don't get drinks, but you get to go to the festival, and basically there's not really any difference, there's no functional difference, if I recall correctly, between a supporter and a freeloader. Last year I freeloaded, but instead of paying the $65, I just volunteered for the festival, because I didn't really have the money. I figured I would volunteer to make up for that, and that was a lot of fun. So if you've never volunteered for a festival, and you don't want to pay the $65, consider volunteering for the festival, and that way you're giving back, but you're not giving out of pocket. And you don't, believe me, there's no, your festival experience is in no way negatively affected. Mine, I think, was very, very positively affected, because now I can always say that I was literally, in a couple of different ways, a part of the first Southeast Linux Fest, which is cool, you know, that's really neat. So, check that out, please. I've submitted a talk to Southeast Linux Fest. We'll see if they select me as a speaker or not. I know they're having a lot of speakers this year, but if a lot of speakers submitted talks, then, you know, they still may not have enough slots for everyone to be put into. And they've got their own agenda in terms of what they think their audience is going to be interested in hearing and things like that. So it's just anyone's guess as to whether the things that I'm interested will mesh with the things that they think their audience is interested in. Another festival just around the same time, in fact June 19th, is FosCon, which is same coast, opposite end. It's in Rochester, New York, which is upstate New York. You can go to Rochester Institute of Technology and attend FosCon. I think it's a one-day event, or I should probably know that, and I don't. Might be a two-day event. I'm not really sure. But yes, it is a FosCon. It is FosCon.org, and I will be speaking there. So that was that. Let's see. KDE booth. I will probably be either manning the KDE booth at Southeast Linux Fest and at FosCon, or I will be helping with the KDE booth in Southeast Linux Fest and FosCon. I say probably and maybe and stuff like that because I'm not too sure if someone else has dibs on this task yet. And I know that last year a guy named Ian, really nice guy, was at the KDE booth at Southeast Linux Fest, and I interviewed him and stuff like that. And I think he wasn't at Ohio Linux Fest. And so I thought, well, you know, it might be a good idea to, if he's not going to be able to get to Southeast Linux Fest again, I want to make sure someone's representing KDE there. So I emailed the promo-KDE promo mailing list and just volunteered myself as the KDE representative and cited my show and stuff like that as proof that, you know, I actually know a little bit something about KDE and that I've used it quite a lot, stuff like that. So, and they seemed pretty open, well, very open to it. They're all for it. So it's just going to be a question of whether anyone else with, I guess, maybe more technical knowledge or just someone who's already done this before can actually step in and take over, or if it will be better if I do it. So either way, someone's going to be there with KDE, representing KDE, and I just have to get it all figured out in terms of what hardware I can bring to demonstrate, stuff like that. So we shall see. It'll be interesting, I reckon. I'm certainly looking forward to it. KDE is something that I'm very interested in, as you know if you've listened to this podcast. Okay, so that's pretty much, I think, all the stuff I had to talk about up front. Everyone likes email, and strangely enough, we use it all the time, and I just don't get the sense that many of us really understand it. I know I didn't. For a very, very long time, email was it was just a mystery to me. I started to understand a little bit better as I started to delve into how it worked, Pine and stuff like that, but even so, it wasn't quite clear to me what was going on. I don't think it's until you start really reading up on the email server that you really start to realize what exactly email is doing. I think to most of us, email is, or not most of us, but to most people, and probably to some of us out at some point in our lives, certainly to me, email was something that you went out and got. You know, you had to go to someone else's site, and you sign up for an email account with them, and that was that. Even if you had your own virtual shared, one of those web hosting things, the simple web hosting things. You get the domain and you get the hosting, and again, unless it's one of those a virtual private shared server, whatever it's called, where you actually have to set it up yourself, it all kind of happens automatically. You know, it's just like the place that you bought your hosting from says, oh, and by the way, since you bought hosting and the domain name, you get 25 free email accounts. What would you like them to be? And you put in your username and your password, and now you've got an email account again. And it feels a little bit more like yours because you own the host, and you own the hosting account and you own the domain name, but you still have no idea how it got there. It's still just very magical. In order to understand it all, you have to kind of read up on it, unfortunately. And this is what I did. I sat down because I decided I was going to implement the built-in Unix mail system on my GNU system. You know, I mean, I knew it was there. I mean, like, after you sign into Slackware, you know, after you install it and you log in for the first time, you have an email message from Pat Volkerdien, and that is just in your mail spool, which is in /var/spool/mail/username. It's obviously there. It's running in the background. We just don't know how to use it. We don't know how to actually take advantage of it. Well, some of us do, but I didn't, and a lot of other people don't. So if you don't, listen up. Here's how. So this, I should mention, this isn't how to set up an email server, okay? This is definitely not that. And so we're still going out and getting mail from other servers and stuff like that. But the thing is that it's important, I think, to understand the process of this stuff. And it is doing this is as opposed to just simply signing up for a Gmail account and going into Thunderbird and clicking the little clicky box that says it's a Gmail account. And you put in your user and your password and it figures out everything. The incoming server, the outgoing server, the different ports that you can use, the different kind of encryption that you can use. You know, it's all just very, very auto-magical, which is great. It's great for the ideal of having really, really smooth and sort of user-invisible and transparent kind of computer environment. But if you want to know this kind of stuff, it's kind of a detriment. It's really hard to figure this stuff out unless you sit down and actually do the work and understand where you're getting mail from, where you're sending it to, and how you have to authenticate in order for it to get into that slot and all these other things. So that's more what this is about, not really. It's not about setting up your own email server so that you don't have to go get email from a place. So first of all, you've got to sit down and read about 6 man pages. Fetch mail, so just man fetch mail. There's man fetch mail RC, man proc mail, man send mail, man mutt, and man mail. Those are literally, I mean, that'll take you quite some time to get through all that. I wouldn't skim it if you're really interested in understanding this stuff. You really kind of have to read it. The bad news is that after you read all of those documents, all 6 man files, which are some of them are quite long, all you'll be is more confused at the end of it. At least I was. And partly because they keep throwing around these terms that I've never heard before, like MUA, MTA, and MDA. And if you search for those terms on the internet, depending on where you're searching and how you're searching, you might get all kinds of results for those acronyms, because they're not all specific to a Unix-like system. Email system. It's not necessarily in that context. You have to kind of search around for like Linux email MDA or MUA or whatever, and then you might get some results. The results that I found were on Linuxtopia, Linuxtopia. And if you go to Linuxtopia, and I'll have this link in the show notes, they do have a really good explanation of the mail system on a GNU system, or on a Unix-like computer, because it obviously BSD and Solaris do basically the same thing, I think. Actually, Solaris might not do it the same way. Point is that you'll find information about this. So, MUA, we'll talk about the MUA, the MTA, and the MDA, what they are, how they relate to each other, and then we'll start building up some workflows, really getting into how this is done. So this isn't going to be just a conceptual discussion of email. It's going to result in going into different conf files and actually screwing around with stuff. So MUA is what's called a mail user agent. A mail user agent is a very generic term for very specific applications, and so you and I might think of a mail user agent as Thunderbird, or Claws, or Kmail, or Pine, Mutt, even Mail, the line command Mail. Those are all MUAs. They're basically front ends to dealing with email. The generic term for it is a mail user agent. So you might also call it an email client. That's what I generally knew it as. Email client makes sense to me. Mail user agent makes no sense to me. Well, now it does. So that's what a mail user agent is, and that's abbreviated as an MUA. Okay, next is an MTA, and that's the Metropolitan Transit Authority in New York, or at least that's what I thought it was. But in email, it is mail transfer agent. Who knew? So a mail transfer agent has one job, and it's very specific, and that is to get email from one computer to another. That's what it does. It will get an email message from your computer to the person sitting right next to you at home, or to the person across the room in a computer lab, or a person sitting off in Australia. It doesn't matter where that computer is, it's the MTA's job to get the email from you to them, or from them to you. So some of the MTA applications would be something like SendMail, or PostFix, FetchMail, GetMail, Qmail, XM, EXIM. Those are MTAs, and you don't use them in the same way that you use a mail user agent. You know, you don't sit down and invoke SendMail, or you know, you're not going to go out to SourceForge and look for the GUI version of sendmail. You know, I mean, that's not how it works. They're more like processes or daemons almost. You know, they're things that do this without much user interaction after you set it up and get it all configured, which we'll do. The MDA is a mail delivery agent, and this just sits on your local computer, and by local computer I mean the one right in front of you right now, like the one that you can reach out and touch right now. That's your local computer. So it sits on your local computer, and it filters incoming messages. It can catch spam, or it can take lots of different email or email messages to lots of different users on your system, and it can parse it and figure out who goes, what message goes to what mailbox, basically. So it's sort of a postman in a way, but it's also a cool one that filters out all your junk mail. The built-in version of that would be Procmail, P-R-O-C-M-A-I-L, Procmail. There's also something called Spam Assassin, which I've heard of, never really understood what that was, but now I kind of do. And stuff like that. Now, some applications, just to, you know, complicate things, make it a little bit more difficult for us to understand, some applications actually have this built-in, so you don't actually have to use an MDA with certain big monolithic email clients. I mean, MUAs. So Thunderbird or Evolution or Kmail, stuff like that, they're probably going to have an MDA. I think all of those have an MDA built in. You don't actually have to think about it or ever know that there's such a thing as MDA. Other more modular and sort of, you know, more true to the Unix ideal, those clients, Mutt and Pine and Elm and Mail and Rmail and all those things, they don't have an MDA. They don't want to program it. They don't want to write an MDA. There's already an MDA called Procmail. Why would they write it? Very smart. Okay, so the point being that you've got these MTAs and MDAs and MUAs, but now how do they all fit together, right? Well, it's actually pretty easy. You can kind of think of it as a flow chart. So for incoming messages, where's the message going to come from? I don't know. It's going to come from a computer. What's the thing that deals with getting a mail message from one computer to another? It's an MTA. So your first step is going to be MTA. Before you ever have to look at it, you want someone to sort it for you. So the MTA is going to pass it off to the MDA. That's the mail delivery agent. It's going to make sure it's not spam, or make sure that it's actually addressed to you and not your significant other or your brother or whatever. And then that's going to get sorted, and then it's going to be plopped off into a mail user agent, which is basically just a program to look at mail. So the workflow for incoming is MTA to MDA for the sorting, and then MDA to MUA for your viewing pleasure. What about outgoing? It's a little bit simpler. Outgoing, you start obviously with an MUA, right? Because you have to write the message. So you launch Thunderbird, or you launch Pine or something, and that's your MUA. And then you click send, and it doesn't need to filter anything. You know, there's no MDA interaction here, so it just goes straight to MTA, which is the mail transfer agent, meaning that it needs to get that mail off of your computer onto someone else's computer. So that's outgoing is MUA to MTA. All right, so those are the generic workflows. But we're in Linux, right? So we have lots and lots of choices, correct? So think about this. If I may step back from mail for a moment. Let's say that we want to sit down and design a brochure for a Linux Fest. Well, we know the generic workflow. We would need some text, gotta get the actual text on the paper. We need some graphics, some pretty pictures, everyone likes pictures. And then we need to put them on a page in such a way that it's actually laid out nicely and it looks attractive. So that would be text, graphics, layout. Well, we're in Linux. You might use Kate for your text, Krita for your graphics, and Scribus for layout, which would be an all cute solution, by the way. Now, someone else might use Vim for the text, GIMP for graphics, and OpenOffice for layout, which you should never do because OpenOffice isn't a page layout program, but they can still do it. And then yet again, someone else might use Emacs for text, Inkscape for graphics, and something completely different, like, I don't know, DTP Blender for the layout. So these are all different, you know, perfectly valid ways of doing the same thing, right? It's not a bad thing that there are so many choices, as we always say in the Linux world. It's a good thing, but you have to kind of narrow your focus when you're actually sitting down to do something, right? You need to know what you're going to do. That's how the email workflow is here. We could say, oh, I'm going to use PostFix for my MTA. I'm going to use Spam Assassin for my MDA, and then I'm going to use Pine for MUA. That would work. But someone else might want to use Fetchmail for their MTA, Procmail for their MDA, and Mutt for their MUA. Or they could use Getmail for their MTA and Procmail for their MDA and just use mail itself on as the MUA. You can do whatever you want to do, basically. So you want to sit down and do a little bit of research for yourself now that you've read all those man pages, so you're totally tired from that and totally confused. You read Linuxtopia, so now you kind of understand. Now you have to figure out what you actually want to use, and that's not that easy. One thing that I realized after using Pine quite a bit was that it doesn't quite fit my workflow. I like Pine. It's a nifty Alpine, I should say. It's a nifty application. It's easy to use. It's easy to navigate. I know how to configure it. I'm kind of used to it. It is my primary email application, but it's kind of always that sort of different kind of application that I'm always going into, you know. It always wants to use Pico for everything. I mean, I set it to use Vim, but it's got that kind of Pico style to it, where you have these series of control whatever keyboard combinations, and I mean, that works, but it just does, it's not quite how I usually work. So I was looking for something a little bit different for my front end, so I decided to try Mutt. And now there, if you look into Mutt, you're going to get into this whole kind of like religious following that you probably don't even want to have to know about. So there are some serious hardcore Mutt fans out there, Cafe Ninja being one of them. Go to cafeninja.blogspot.com, I think it is. He has a lot of great information about Mutt and how to configure it and how to customize it, patch it, how to get the most recent version, just all kinds of information. So if you want to really get into the seedy underworld of hardcore Mutt fandom, Cafe Ninja is probably your guy. So my workflow, my systems workflow that I chose for myself is for the outgoing messages. I needed Mutt for my front end and MSMTP for my outgoing, rather than using SendMail. And I'll tell you why in a little while, and you can decide for yourself whether you need to use MSMTP or SendMail. So that's my outgoing. Now for incoming stuff, for my my mail transfer agent, I'm using FetchMail. For my MDA, which is that little thing that's going to sort through everything for me, is ProcMail. And then my mail user agent, the one that I actually look at and use every day, is Mutt. So let's talk about, now you know my workflow, let's talk about how to configure it all. And this ought to work for everyone, so if you just want to copy my workflow, I don't have any intellectual property rights on this, so feel free. You know what? Before we get into the nitty-gritty, let's take a coffee break. Yeah, so just go get yourself a cup of coffee, take a couple of sips, enjoy it, savor it, and we can start back with configuring our systems. Alright, so let's start with FetchMail, because that's the first step in our outgoing process. Now, I'm no FetchMail wizard or guru or anything like that, so I'm going to give you a very basic configuration that will get you up and running, but it's not secure, and it's not super fancy, so if you want to get something fancier than this, you're going to want to do more research on a better FetchMail configuration. I need to do that myself. Right now, I'm just running this kind of bare bones, hey, it works, okay, I'm done for now kind of configuration. I need to come up with a better way to make this a lot more secure. But for now, this is working. So the thing that you need to do is make sure, first of all, that FetchMail is installed. Chances are you've got FetchMail installed. If you don't know, then you can just type which, W-H-I-C-H, FetchMail. And if it has FetchMail in there, it'll tell you where it is. And it's probably in somewhere like /user/bin/FetchMail. Assuming you've got that, you're going to need to create a .FetchMailRC folder file in your home directory. To do that, you can just do a vim space .FetchMailRC or Emacs or Nano or whatever you want to use. Okay, so you need to enter some information into this, and this is very, very human readable, and it says literally poll, P-O-L-L, space pop.secureserver.net, let's say, with proto pop 3 : user ; not clatu at thebadapples.info ; there has password ; Virata Nikto ; is clatu here and once MDA ; /user/bin/procmail ; and that's it. That's all you need in your FetchMail file. What on earth does all that mean? Okay, well, it's pretty simple, and it is all in the man fetchmailrc file. So if you read that, it gives you samples that you can use, and it gives you some security tips as well, which I have not implemented yet. But you want to chmod that to 700. So the idea is poll, P-O-L-L, means to go out to the server, and then it tells you what server to go out to. So that's the pop.secureserver.net. That's GoDaddy's email server. That's why I put that in there. So if you have email with someone else, then that would be that server. The reason that we're still using someone else's server to get that email is because that's the account that I have set up right now for my email. Well, there's a couple of different accounts that I have set up, but so far, right now, all my emails do exist on some other computer, and I don't want to open my computer up to incoming email quite yet. Eventually I will, but right now I'm just using someone else's server because I haven't gotten around to using my own. So the proto, it says with proto, that means with protocol POP3. So I could use IMAP, I could use POP3, I could use whatever I knew that my server supported. And then colon, and then user, so this saying, okay, here's the username for you, and that is, quote, notclaw2@thebadapples.info, end quote. That is literally the username. My server doesn't want me to just give notclaw2. They want my name and my domain, so that's why the whole thing is in there. And then it says there, so obviously that's saying over there on that remote server, that's the username and stuff. It there has password, and then the quote, errata nicto, which is the password that I invented for this example, end quote, is Clatu here. So is Clatu, meaning that's my local username, Clatu, on my computer. When I sign in, I type in Clatu and then my password. So that's is Clatu here. And once MDA, that means please use the MDA located at /user/bin/procmail, meaning that when fetchmail goes and gets the message and brings it into the computer, don't dump it onto my lap, dump it over into MDA first so that it can sort through the stuff, let it deal with what inbox to put it into. You need to have procmail set up for this to work, which we'll get into in a moment, but you do need to have that in existence on the system, kind of ready to be used. Fetchmail wants to use an MDA. The Getmail might not. I was playing around with Getmail. I think it doesn't require MDA. I went ahead and used MDA because I figured in the future I might want to get some kind of elaborate MDA rules or something, so I might want to do that. If I recall correctly, and I could be wrong, but if you just absolutely want to skip the MDA step, I think Getmail might do the trick. So that's it. So that's Fetchmail. That's what Fetchmail RC does. That's all it does. It just tells Fetchmail to go out to a server, log in with this username and this password, and then send it back to this local user and pass it on to the MDA on the system, which in this case is procmail. So at this point, the mail's been transferred, and now it needs to be sorted. And like I say, that is via procmail. So procmail is the MDA, and obviously, there are entire divisions of computer science dedicated to sorting this kind of stuff out. I mean, filtering spam is a multi-million dollar business at this point. You and me with Procmail RC, probably not going to do anything all that incredible. Getting Spam Assassin and looking into that could be kind of interesting, but it's not something that I've done at this point, so I can't really tell you much about it. The configuration is really simple if you keep it basic. I do, like I say, I'm really doing this just because in the future I might want to do something more elaborate, so I kind of want to have the infrastructure in place. So again, just create a .procmailrc file in your home directory, and you want to define certain things. The first thing you want to define is the path, or the path for procmail to be aware of, which is, in my case, I put /user/local/bin/user/bin/bin. And then maildir is the mail directory. So in this case, I'm putting it out to /var/spool/mail/clatu, which means that I'm dumping all my incoming mail into my spool, my /var/spool directory. And then the default you want to set, so default equals $new/clatu mail, meaning that the default place to dump all my new mail is going to be in this mail directory, which I've already defined as /var/spool/mail/clatu, and then in a folder there called new, in a file called clatu mail. Okay, then you can set some rules, and a rule is kind of simple, and like I say, I mean, there's whole divisions of computer science dedicated to this stuff, so I'm not even going to bother trying to guess at all the different potential things that you could do with this, but as an example, :0, and then next line would be :\subject:\Windows. New line :dev/null, meaning that anything in the subject, if it contains the word Windows, send it to dev null. That's probably not a very good rule to have, because someone might say, you know, Klaatu, I'm a fellow Windows hater, and maybe that would be a great email that I'd want to read, and I've just sent it to dev null. Probably not a very good idea, but that would be an example of a rule. You could, of course, put in anything, you know, all the common spam kinds of stuff that you want to send to dev null that people just aren't going to email you. But like I say, it's a completely different subject, so if you want to do that, you can look into how to filter stuff out like that. So most importantly, notice that procmail.rc defines a few defaults. It defines the valid paths that are related to email stuff, which is that first line, the user local bin, user bin, and bin. And then it defines the default mail directory, and which I had to make. I had to make the directory Klaatu in /var/spool/mail/, then I had to make dir Klaatu because that didn't exist yet. And then, you know, mutt and I think getmail actually both wanted to, they wanted three subdirectories in the mail directory. They wanted cur, C-U-R, new, and temp. So I had to create all of those directories in order to get everything to play nice. So I just did a make dir /var/spool/mail/klaatu/cur, and then new, and then temp. I made all that stuff. Procmail also wants a single text file to which it can dump all of your mail. That's how this stuff works, apparently. I never knew this, but apparently what happens is that there's just like this one big text file, and in this case I just called it Klaatu mail, and I did that with a touch. I just :\spool/mail/klaatu/new/klaatu mail, and Procmail just starts concatenating all the new messages into this big text file. And the MUAs, as it turns out, are programmed to parse this text file. And I think I read somewhere that it sees a new from line. The from line is where it like starts saying, oh, this must be a new email message. Or a from envelope, I think is technically what it's called. And then it parses it and actually cuts it into little pieces for you, the user, to see as if though they were individual files. But really, it's just one big text file that it keeps concatenating things to. So that's kind of interesting. So that's procmail. It's not really that complex, you can tell. It's just kind of defining your environment. So I guess to break that down, first go into var/spool/mail and make your mail directory if it doesn't exist already. And I think that should be your username, so I just made it Klaatu. And then within that folder, you want to make three subfolders, CUR, new, and TMP. Those are your folders. And now in one of those folders, specifically in new, you want to touch one just empty file. Just call it inbox or Klaatu mail or whatever. And that will be the place that procmail dumps all the mail to. So the path in procmail.rc would be user local bin, user bin, and bin. The mail directory would be /var/spool/mail/klaatu. And then the default location for all your mail would be $maildir/new/klaatu mail, which you've already created, so it can dump stuff in there. And that's really all. I mean, that's all you need in procmail.rc. And now your system itself, with those new folders and that empty text file, is ready to receive email. So at this point in the life cycle of the email incoming, we've gotten it onto our computer, we've sent it to the postman, the MDA, so he can sort through it. He's throwing out all the junk mail, and he passes all the good stuff to the user named Klaatu. So the only thing left, really, is a mail client, something for us, the user, to actually be able to see our mail with. Now, I'm using Mutt right now, because I decided to try out Mutt, because I've heard it was really good. Now, Mutt, interestingly, and it turns out all user agents, right, are just, they're really empty shells, and a lot of people, again, don't really realize that. Email is something that lives inside a Thunderbird, right? Just like the internet lives inside a Firefox. No, actually it doesn't. Email is processed way underneath your awareness, down in that weird folder called /var, and then even in a weirder folder called /spool. So mail has nothing to do with what you're looking at it with, which is interesting to me. I mean, I think a lot of users, they kind of think of the application as being the data, and it's really not. The application is a mere portal to your data. And Mutt makes it very very clear, because Mutt, you can actually, you could launch Mutt on your local mail folder to look at one set of email, and then you could launch Mutt to /var/spool/mail and look at another set of email. It's pretty cool. But such is the beauty of the modular philosophy of Unix. Now, this also means that you're going to have to sit down and make a .muttrc file in your home directory. There are places online where people just advertise their muttrc file with such pride. They can go on forever because mutt is obviously very, very customizable. So let's try to simplify it for a moment. And like I say, if you want to get more complex, which you should, poke around online and find some cool muttrc files and try to figure out what they're doing and emulate them to the extent that you want to emulate them. So the first thing that you want to do is set pager equals quote less end quote. That means that when you look at your mail, you're seeing it in less, you know, not in some other thing. Set real name equals quote clatu close quote. Set from equals quote not clatu at thebadapples.info end quote. Set folder equals, and you should be able to guess what this is almost, /var/spool/mail/clatu. Set spool file /var/spool/mail/clatu. Set inbox, that is the letter M as in mail, and then box, equals /var/spool/mail/clatu/new/clatu mail. Remember, that's that big monolithic text file that is just going to get concatenated to over and over again. So we're just telling Mutt to look at that file to look at the messages. Set sort equals /date. Set signature equals quote, sent via free software, close quote. So after all of that, everything's pretty much optional. I mean, you can set all kinds of preferences, whether the user gets to see, the recipients get to see the BCC list or not, what signature you want, and there are Perl lines that you can do to actually make your signature fairly random. You can set up OpenPG, you know, GPG with this. You can do all kinds of cool stuff. Lots and lots of configuration files out there. And then there are patches and hacks and stuff on Mutt that will give you that traditional kind of like listing of all your inbox, your directories over on the left, and just a lot you can do with this. So feel free to explore around. Like I say, there are people out there who just love Mutt, and if you find them, they will be more than happy to help you configure yours to do cool stuff. Okay, so now if you launch Mutt, it knows where to look for the big email dump file, you know, the big spool file, and you can check mail, and I mean, you can look at the mail that you've went out and fetched. You can write mail and send it back, well, almost, not yet, and all the normal stuff that you do with an email client. So simple as that. So specifically, like if we had all this configured just for checking, you know, we've only done incoming, so we haven't done anything where we can actually send yet. So we want to check our mail, right? So you sit down in front of your computer, you at the bash prompt, you type fetch mail, and that will literally go out to the server, look for new messages, and bring them back if they exist. Then it processes this through your MDA, which is proc mail. Now to look at all that stuff, you can type in Mutt, and suddenly all your email files appear in front of you in a nice user-friendly GUI, or not GUI, but, you know, graph, what do you call it? Something with an interface, you know, it's not just a command line. You could also, like I said, you could just type in mail, and it will let you know if you've got mail as well, and you can read and stuff like that, but it's just not quite as friendly. Okay, well, obviously you don't want to just look at mail. You don't want to just check it, right? You want to look at it, and then you want to be able to send replies and responses. Well, happily, we've got everything set up except one little component, which is the send mail component. Turns out that send mail, which is, again, an MTA, send mail wants to assume that you are a big, fancy email server. And it doesn't really necessarily make it super easy to use SMTP authentication with sendmail as such. There is a copy of sendmail in, like, if you're on Slackware, it's in /user/share/sendmail/sendmail-slackware.cf, and you can copy that to /etc/mail/sendmail.cf, and that'll be a nice customized Slackware setup for sendmail. But the problem is that, at least for me, I don't have an open portal to the internet. I have to go through my ISP. I'm not a virtual server. I'm not a server out there in a big server farm. No, its own SM. I'm not a mail server, basically, is what I'm not. In order to get my messages out to the internet, what has to happen is that I need to send my mail up to my ISP's server, and then it needs to say, okay, this is a mail message that wants to get sent out. That means I need to process it through my SMTP process. So it's going to try to do that, but it doesn't like, that's called relaying, and it doesn't, they don't like to do that anymore, because people would do that, and they just relay, you know, a billion spam messages off of servers. So if you can't authenticate yourself and let your ISP know who you are and why you think you should be sending email out of their SMTP server, they're not going to let that go through. So what would need to happen is that we need to get send mail to go up to the server at the ISP, log in for us, and then send the message. SendMail probably can do that, but there's an easier way. I'm just guessing that SendMail can do that. I was reading up on it. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. I got that SendMail was a very complex and cool application, but I didn't understand anything. So the answer is MSMTP. That's a little application. It looks and smells and feels and tastes just like SendMail, except that it does SMTP authentication, okay? So out with SendMail, in with MSMTP, and if you're on Slackware, you can just do an SBOPKG -i MSMTP from a root prompt, and it will install MSMTP for you in the blink of an eye. Very nice. If you're not on Slackware, you could probably poke around your repository for it, or you can go out to, I think it's on SourceForge or something like that. I'll try to remember to put a show note link in the show notes for that. After you've installed MSMTP, then all you need to do is add one little line to your mutrc file, and that is set sendmail equals quote slash user slash bin slash MSMTP --host equals smtp.myisp.net --from equals notclat2.thebadapples.info close quote. This is going to basically invoke MSMTP when you hit the send button in MUT, and it's going to furthermore invoke MSMTP with the option of defining the host as smtp.yourisp.net. So that's whoever you're getting your internet service through. They have an SMTP server, you know, that they can send mail out from. You're defining your host as their SMTP server, and then you're defining your from, you know, who this is from, as notclat2.thebadapples.info, the actual location that you want this to look like it got sent from. Now, you may need a lot more than that, and here's why. Because I'm paying for a static IP address. I recently switched ISPs to, you know, away from Comcast to some more local kind of smaller company, I guess, and then I'm paying for a static IP, so I actually don't have to authenticate to get to their SMTP server, which is nice, but I do still have to go through their SMTP server, which is why MSMTP makes it really easy for me, because that's what its job is. It will take your mail off of your computer, knowing that its destination is just to do a sort of a relay race pass-off some SMTP server out there on the net. So that makes it really easy, because you're defining, hey, the host is actually going to be smtp.myisp.net. If your ISP, if you're not paying for a static IP, or if you are and they still want you to authenticate, you may have to put a user and a password in that line. In which case, again, you want to make, the least you want to do is make your .mutrc, you want to chmod that to 700 as well. You can create for yourself a .msmtprc file in your home directory as well, and have like different user accounts set up, and have all kinds of interesting things going on with msmtp in case you need to send out, you know, from different places. But again, you can just read the man page on that to make it fancier. But either way, of any file that you're putting an unencrypted password into, you really are obviously going to want to at least, at the very least, chmod that to 700. And in terms of it being high or low on the security scale, that's pretty low. So think about what you're doing and stuff like that. Like I say, I haven't set about optimizing this yet. It's really been more of a wrapping my mind around this whole email thing, and that's the stage that I'm at right now. Further customization is definitely in order. Okay, so now you can fire up MUT, and you can look at your, well, you can, so I guess the workflow, again, fetch mail would go get your email, right? And then you fire up MUT, and then you read all your mail, and then you decide to respond to something. So you hit respond, you type in your message, and then you hit send. It sends it out to MSMTP. It sends it out to your ISP, says, hey, it's okay, let me in. It drops off the messages. Your ISP sends that out into the internet to be sent to wherever they're destined to go. And just like our fine post office here, neither snow nor rain nor gloom of night shall stay these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds, meaning that, yes, your email will get to its destination. So, that's email on Linux, GNU, stuff like that. BSD, as far as I know, operates the same way. OpenSolaris, the word is still out on that. I'm not 100% sure what they do about all of this stuff. I started playing around with it at work, but I didn't really get that far. I did notice that, I think, Fetchmail and I think it was Fetchmail. Might have been Sendmail, too. None of those were actually installed on OpenSolaris by default. But then again, maybe they just have some specific applications that I'm not aware of. You know, maybe I just doubled up a little bit without knowing it. But yeah, that's the concept of the Unix spool, and that's the way to use it with Unix applications that you can string together to actually have them do different things and get it to actually work for you. That's about it. That's doing the whole email thing. Funny story was that, you know, this new ISP is great. Really is really fantastic. I'm really enjoying it. It's cheaper than Comcast. It's giving me a static IP address. It's not kicking me offline every, like, three times every week, like Comcast used to do. It's just been really, really fantastic, so I've really enjoyed it. But man, I don't understand why every single support representative out there is, I don't know why they can't hire people who actually know what they're talking about. I mean, I'm no expert on this stuff, but I mean, I just called up to ask about how I could pass my SMTP information, you know, what kind of stuff I needed to access the SMTP server and get my email out there. And the person on the representative just could not understand, no matter how many different ways I tried to explain it. They could not understand that I didn't want to sign up for an email account. All I wanted was what kind of information I needed to use their SMTP server. And it wasn't a matter of, like, them being suspicious of me for being a spammer or anything. It was just that they literally didn't understand. And they kept telling me that we only give you a DSL signal. That's all, you know, that's all we are. We're not providing email. And I'm like, I understand that. I don't want your email. I don't want to sign up with you guys for email. I want to, in fact, not sign up with you for email. I just want to send the email out of my box so that I can then go and get it. So, yeah, crazy stuff. I don't know where these people come from, but it can be aggravating when you call a place for technical support and get someone who knows drastically less than you do about the subject. And I know that's bound to happen, but why? It always happens, you know? That's always how it is. You never call up and get a guru, you know? You don't get someone who actually knows what they're talking about. But it all worked out in the end, so hopefully this was informative, and yeah, let me know how it works out for you. Okay, so before I close everything out, I just wanted to quickly or briefly mention that I did get a little bit of a mention on DistroWatch Weekly podcast last week, I think it was, and that was really, really cool, and I appreciate that they did that for me. That was quite nice. I mean, that's a huge, huge show. That's one of those shows. DistroWatch Weekly and the Linux Kernel News, or whatever it is called, the Linux Kernel with John Masters, you know, he kind of summarizes the Linux Kernel mailing list. I don't know if you've ever heard it. It's a really good podcast. But those two are like my serious podcasts that I listen to. You know, those are the ones that you'd expect if you turned on the television to see those in a Linux world. You know, you'd expect those to be on the news channels or something. They mentioned me, and that was cool, and I was flattered, and it was mainly because I'd helped some guy who had emailed me and said, hey, I like your show, thanks, and he needed help setting up his wireless on a Slackware box, and so I told him how to, so then he mentioned me. It was really cool. The thing that it made me think about, though, was my URL, and the URL is of the show is thebadapples.info. Turns out that some jerk out there went and got a website called badapples.info, so just no V at the end, right, or at the beginning, right, and badapples.info is a Macintosh repair place. Obviously, they're all about Macs. They're happy with Macs. They like Macs. And they're not talking about bad apples. They're talking about bad apples. So that's kind of difficult for me because I'm already a tech podcast. So when you hear the term Apple, you think of Macs. And, I mean, I don't even own any Macs almost so much anymore. Actually, I do, but none of them run OS X, I could say that. You know, I'm just not that into them. So, I mean, the whole Macintosh Apple meaning is kind of lost from the podcast, and right now it's more just like the bad apples, like the term, you're a bad apple. Which is kind of cool, you know, I mean, I like that sort of evil badness to it, but my problem is that because of its proximity to tech-related content, I think most people are going to think of Macintosh computers when they think of the bad apple, especially if some person who's hearing DistroWatch Weekly, which is a big famous podcast, hears, go to badapples.info, and they go to badapples.info, and they're like, why did DistroWatch tell me to go to this site? This is a Mac repair site. That Klaatu guy must be a real weirdo. That's not what I want. So I was thinking I need to really rebrand my show to something else, you know, like the bad GNUs or the bad herd or something like that. And I was talking to some friends on IRC 330 from the Linux Cranks and Pegwall from Something Kind of Techie podcast, and they were trying to help me come up with some ideas, and that wasn't really working because apparently they don't have any good ideas about show names anymore. I mean, Something Kind of Techie, I actually lust after that show name. That's a really cool show name. I wish I'd thought of that, but I didn't, and so Pegwall has it, so I guess that's that. So I was going to try to think of a new name, and then I thought, you know what, screw it. What I really need is just a better URL for people to be able to refer people to, because that's the real problem, right? I mean, I'm just afraid of people going to badapples.info instead of thebadapples.info. So luckily, Enigma came to my rescue and decided that it would be perfectly fine if I got a subdomain at Hacker Public Radio. So if you now go to klaatu.hackerpublicradio.org, I'm going to either have that redirect or just kind of have a link on there to point, you know, so that you can click and go to thebadapples.info. And that will be that. So now, from now on, I can give out the official show URL as klaatu.hackerpublicradio.org. Please note that this is not going to change anything about the RSS feed. Nothing's changing. Everything's the same. I'm just getting a URL that I can give to people so that if I think a new audience is going to hear the URL, that audience isn't going to get confused about the name or the intent of the show, or they're not going to mistype the URL and go to some, you know, Apple-loving website by mistake. That would not be good, in my opinion. I think it would be better if people got to Linux-related sites when they heard my name, rather than going to Macintosh sites. So that's the news, klaatu.hackerpublicradio.org. You can send your thanks and adoration to Enigma, the guy who basically is the mastermind behind Hacker Public Radio. So it's really cool that he did that. I'm excited. klaatu.hackerpublicradio.org. That's about the show. That's it. So thanks for listening. The website is, well, you go ahead and say it for me. What is it? Say it. Come on, say it out loud. There you go. klaatu.hackerpublicradio.org. Very good. So that's the website now. The email address, conveniently, is klaatu@hackerpublicradio.org. See how it all starts to fit together? And the place that you can find me is on Freenode and a couple of different channels, mostly Linux-related. So, you know, Linux Cranks, Slacker Media, a lot of Linux Links, Slackware, Linux Basement, Linux Outlaws, Ubuntu UK podcasts, Linux Outlaws, you know, all the typical IRC channels where everyone is the same people in 10 different chat rooms. My nick on there is Not Klaatu. That's where the convention starts to break down, I'm afraid. Not Klaatu. And my IM is Jabber, so it's notklaatu@jabber.org. So hit me up, say hi, and remember to register now for Southeast Linux Fest and for FOSCON, and I will see you there. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Drugs. Mm-mm.